Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, once again, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem. Ted Ross at the controls. Carissa's at the phones. We're going to have a great hour again today. So appreciate you coming along with us. Ted, we've had a good start to the new year in terms of our week. I think just the topics.
Yeah, it's been very compelling, actually. Yeah. Every lunch hour here. Not that I'm surprised. I'm just saying sure, it's been good.
Well, I'm kind of surprised. No, but you know, we spent some time talking prayer the day, and it seems like it sort of is a nice fit to talk parenting because, in terms of our prayer life, we spend most of our time praying about our kids, right? And how we're doing that. So.
For our kids and for our parenting style and what we're doing.
Yes, that's right. We're going to get into all that today. And welcome back a friend to the program who we've enjoyed conversations with in the past. And I know you're going to enjoy the conversation. In fact, we've got a couple of books to give away that our guest has written. John G. Miller is the founder of QBQ, Inc. It's an organizational development firm dedicated to making personal accountability a core value for organizations and individuals. And right away, people are kind of going, oh, no, personal accountability, what? Not that, anything but that. Mill is a Cornell University graduate, and he's been in the training and development industry since the mid-'80s, actually lived in the Midwest for a few years. And so he knows about our weather, which is why he's talking to us today from his home in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, where it's going to be 50 and sunny.
Nice.
So, yeah, oh. So. John has written a couple of books. We'll talk about them. QBQ, The Question Behind the Question, and the one we'll end up focusing most of our time on today is called Parenting the QBQ Way. The subtitle, and this hopefully will catch your attention, How to Be an Outstanding Parent and Raise Great Kids Using the Power of Personal Accountability. And it seems like early on the new year, that would be one of our goals. So, hey, I would love to see 2015 be a year where, you know, our kids really thrive in our home. And that we help them to, you know, learn how to be personally responsible and grow into gifted, stable adults. So, John G. Miller, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Neil, thanks for having me back.
Let's just start in with the QBQ first. It's a great acronym. Looks good on the book title, but what are we talking about the QBQ way?
You know, it's funny, Neil. I appreciate you saying it's a great acronym. When I snagged that acronym in 1998 as a website, QBQ.com, never did I realize back then that three-letter websites would be in such demand. And so here we are all these years later, and about once a week, somebody sends me an email wanting to buy it. Nope, we're staying with it, QBQ.com. It's who we are. It's what we do. It's a great symbol, and it represents the question behind the question. And the question behind the question is, nothing more than an idea, and nothing less than an idea, that helps us practice personal accountability day in, day out. Let me just share with your audience my background. You mentioned I'm a Cornell grad. My wife Karen and I grew up in Ithaca, New York, where Cornell is. And we got married on a June day of 1980 when she was 19 and I was 22. And we're still married, so it'll be 35 years this year. And we came out west to a city called Plymouth, Minnesota, which we'd never heard of, with a little tiny company called Cargill. You've probably never heard of Cargill, have you, Neil?
Well, I think it's grown a little bit since then, yeah.
It was big then. So Cargill brought us out, and we lived in the Cricket Inn, now the Days Inn, on the corner of Highway 55 and 494 for 6 weeks. My 19-year-old bride was so bored, she would borrow the vacuum cleaner from the maid to do her own room and help with the hallways. Now, what does that tell you about my wife?
Yes, you married well.
I married well, that's right. I married up. So I started with Cargill in Plymouth for the summer of 80 to be trained, and then they sent us down to Mankato, Minnesota, where we spent 2 years learning about car warmers and how to plug in your car at night during the winter and how to have your mustache freeze while
sure.
walking 8 blocks to work and all that. And by 1983, we had moved to Great Falls, Montana with Cargill, and the first baby came. Her name is Kristen. And the irony, I think, the blessing, is here we are today on this date, that 32-year-old young woman is in Kalamazoo, Michigan, teaching personal accountability and the QBQ to a group of senior executives at a company there.
Oh, fun.
Because in 2008, the 25-year-old joined me and has been my partner in crime teaching QBQ ever since. So here we are years later. We're based in Denver, and we do one thing. We help organizations and people make personal accountability a core value. I'm going to say that again. Really helping people make personal accountability a core value. And we do that really in three ways at QBQ, Inc. We speak live, so Kristen and I go out and speak. We license a training program that we won't get into on this call, but people can find it at QBQ.com if they're interested for corporations. And then we sell a whole bunch of books. And we have the QBQ book, the Flipping the Switch book, a book called Outstanding, and, of course, Parenting the QBQ Way. But if somebody was to wake me up at 3 in the morning and say, John, why do you exist? We exist to help personal accountability become a day-in, day-out core value for people. And I want to say right now, Neil, that starts with me. That starts with Kristen, my daughter, who works here. It starts with Karen. It's not like we're telling everybody else, hey, you need more accountability. Because that's often the way accountability is viewed. It's often viewed as something for everybody else. No, it's for me, but how do I do it? Well, that's where QBQ came from. From 1986 to 1995, I sold management, sales management, and selling skills training in Minneapolis, St. Paul to all kinds of good firms, like Norwest Bank before they were Wells Fargo, Deli Express Sandwiches down in Eden Prairie, a little tiny company called 3M. I would call on these corporations for almost a decade, and as I was selling them training, I would sit in these sessions. I would sell the executive on buying a three-day session from me on leadership, and I would be facilitating my mentor, my CEOs, the guy who owned my training company, because I was only in my late 20s then. I'd be facilitating his content, his videos, his training, and we'd go to the Northland Inn, or we'd go over to the Holiday Inn in Shoreview, Minnesota. And we'd run these sessions, and I would sit there for 3 days, and the second 2 days would often be me in the back of the room listening while the clients engaged. And that's when I started to hear people asking some really lousy questions, like, why do we have to go through all this change? When is someone going to train me? When are my people going to get their act together? Why doesn't the CEO give us a clear vision? When will that department do its job right? Why don't I get paid more? When is someone going to train me? When am I going to get more coaching? When is my company going to hand me knowledge on a silver platter? Why can't we get better systems and more tools? So I was hearing these questions. And since we're such good friends, Neil, and our audience, your audience, has a lot of stuff in common with what we believe at QBQ, I've just got to share where it really started. I was up in Breezy Point, Minnesota, doing a session in 1993, and the CEO, who was an imposing man, 6'6", 325 pounds, big physical guy, he stood up in front of his 11 directors and he shamed them. He said, what do you mean you don't know what our mission and vision is? It's been on the wall for a year. What's wrong with you people? And I remember sitting in the back of the room, Neil, thinking, now, wait a minute. There's got to be a better question here. And so from those kinds of experiences, I came up with the better question. And it's not really one question, it's many questions, but we call it the question behind the question, the QBQ. So, a couple of examples, and then I'll be quiet and you could ask another question. But instead of saying, when is someone going to train me? How about asking, what can I do to develop myself? I mean, aren't they my talents? Do I really want to hide them under a bushel basket or bury them in the ground? No, I don't. What can I do to develop myself? See, that's personal accountability. Instead of asking, when will that department do its job right? What about asking, how can I be my best today? Instead of asking, who's going to solve the problem? Who made the mistake? Who dropped the ball? What about asking, what can I do to help contribute right now? What can I do to make a difference? So that became the question behind the question idea. And I went out and started teaching it in 1994, 1995. The first place I ever taught at Neil, not far from you, St. Jude Medical in Little Canada, Minnesota, the makers of heart valves. And I came back a few months later, and the VP of operations and the VP of HR were using it. And if you know anything about the training industry, Neil, most stuff is never used. Most of it is theory, esoteric, not good. It's not applied. But I came back, and St. Jude was using this QBQ thing I had taught on one Tuesday. And so I thought, you know what? I've got a hold of something that's worthwhile. It's good. People like it. So I left my mentor in 1995, and I went off, and I started teaching it on my own, became a keynote speaker, and a couple years later, we moved to Denver to escape the 13-degree temperatures. And that's my story.
And you're sticking to it.
Yep, I am.
John G. Miller is my guest today, and we're going to talk, get into more about how we can make personal accountability a core value, especially when it comes to raising our children and parenting, and that's going to be our focus. We do have some copies of John's books that we'll give away at the end of the hour. If you'd love to, and I hope you will, sign up for a drawing for that, you can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. And as we go along, you may find yourself with a question or two based on our conversation. I hope that you will feel free to ask the questions, because this is our discussion today is about the questions behind the questions. QBQ, John G. Miller, who is the author of QBQ, The Question Behind the Question, Flipping the Switch, 40 Outstanding, 47 Ways to Make Your Organization Exceptional, and Parenting the QBQ Way. We'll get more with John in just a moment as we talk a little bit about, you know, the personal accountability in an entitlement society. Some great parenting advice coming up, 877-933-2484. Sixteen past the hour, talking today with John G. Miller on Connecting Faith. John is the Cornell University graduate, founder of QBQ, Inc. He's worked with hundreds of Fortune 500 companies, as well as government and faith-based organizations, and thousands of individuals to help them make personal accountability a core value. And we're going to get into Parenting the QBQ Way. Got some copies to give away at 877-93-FAITH. John, talking about personal accountability, we live in an entitlement society, and I'm wondering, you know, how does this affect, you know, how do, those values, it seems like, are going to be colliding pretty regularly.
Yeah. you know, my dad was a Cornell wrestling coach for 26 years, Neil, so he taught me many things in the wrestling side of his life, but he was also a pastor for 40. And he started out in 1958, the year I was born, as a lay pastor, saying he was going to stay at some church for 6 weeks and fill in, and he stayed there for 16 years. Then he moved to his home church for 20 more years. The point here is I grew up in the home of a wrestling coach and a pastor, and it was a very interesting home to grow up in, because every morning I would get out of bed and have to ask this question: which one will he be, the wrestling coach or the pastor? But on the pastor side, I bet he quoted the "be in the world, not of the world" scripture 1,000 times to me all the years I was growing up. And I can't imagine a more important truth for a Christian to abide by today. Well, there's many, but than that one. Because we are inundated with a media monster, if you will, that is driving entitlement thinking. Everybody's a victim. Everybody should be offended. And we're driven by Hollywood with their values. And we could just go on and on with the examples of "I deserve" kind of thinking, entitlement thinking. I mean, I have been with clients who have small business owners, Neil, who have caught me in the elevator after a session to vent to me because they can't hire anybody because whatever state they were in, everybody was on unemployment and didn't want to work. I mean, those kinds of messages that we've built into our society that we hear every day are, in my opinion, they're lousy messages, they're dangerous messages, and here's the problem: as a Christian, they don't allow me to be what I could be. How can I be witnessing and spreading the gospel and setting the example if I'm laying on my couch watching Walking Dead reruns, collecting an unemployment check because I don't really want to work? So the entitlement thinking is so strong that it's incumbent upon a parent to not just hope our kids don't get it, But to number one, not be entitled ourselves, because modeling is the most powerful of all teachers. And if you don't mind me repeating myself, Neil, modeling is the most powerful of all teachers. And so if we've got children who are entitled, first of all, is mom and dad. Are mom and dad sending a message of, hey, I deserve a raise. I deserve this. I deserve that. Are we modeling this in the home? And then the second thing, strong parents, and yes, we use the term strong parents as opposed to weak parents, and we can get into that. A strong parent is always coaching, counseling, and yes, confronting our children to make sure that they are not buying into the entitlement message. Hey, my friends have an iPhone 6. I deserve an iPhone 6. No, you don't. So with that speech, I'll let you ask another question. Well, but the entitlement thinking is really a burdensome thing in our world right now, and Christians have to fight it.
One of the things you address early on in the book, Parenting the QBQ Way, which the subtitle is great, How to Be an Outstanding Parent and Raise Great Kids Using the Power of Personal Accountability. I think we all long to be outstanding parents. That is a possibility. That's a reality. It can happen. But you state early in the book, my child is the product of my parenting. And I think all of us would like to say, well, I'd like some exceptions to that rule because, you know, two out of the three of my kids are great. But expand on my child is the product of my parenting.
You just triggered a thought, Neil. I heard a comedian once say to the audience, I have three wonderful kids. And then the audience starts applauding. And then he says, and then we have a fourth kid. Let me tell you what our belief is on the personal accountability thing. My background is selling and teaching QBQ now for 20 years, so I'm always dealing in the organizational world with blame and all that, and victim thinking, procrastination. We can talk about those things, but the blame thing and the excuse making is very big in organizations. Well, I didn't get it done because somebody didn't give me the information I needed. Well, when Karen and I were asked by Penguin, our publisher, a couple years ago to write the parenting book, it was very easy to take that content and say, okay, you know, what are some of the things that parents do to exonerate themselves from how their kids are acting, what their kids are doing, how their kids are believing and thinking? Now, obviously, there is a point as we raise our children, we're done. In fact, in the book, we even talk about the importance of moving with a child from the stage of building the child. Like, you know, when they're 10, we're building them. But when they're 20, I'm sorry, folks, we're not building anymore. Now we're relating to them. And that's an evolutionary process through the teen years. We begin to build less and relate more. But when they're young, are we really working with them on not making excuses, teaching them personal accountability, not being entitled? Are we modeling it as mom and dad? This is our job as a parent, to be a parent that says, okay, whatever my child has become, I cannot blame grandma. I cannot blame Hollywood. I cannot blame Congress or the guy in the Oval Office or society or Hollywood or the movies that are out or social media, Twitter and Facebook. My child is a product of my parenting. Let me give you a quick business example. For years, I've trained salespeople. And the best salespeople, you talk about being outstanding, Neil. An outstanding salesperson, when he misses a sale, you know what he can say? He says, I missed the sale. I didn't make the sale. I own the result. He doesn't say, it was our pricing, it was our products, it was the lack of four-color brochures, it was our website. He says, I own the result. You take that concept of parenting. You find that really strong parents say, I own the result. My child is 2 or 3 or 4, and all children throw tantrums at times, but what am I doing differently to help him move through this process versus just saying, well, there's nothing I can do. All kids go through this. It's just nature's way. See, that's just exonerating the parent from any good, strong parenting. We have come to believe that the key question parents need to ask every day is who's in charge. There was a show in the 80s called Charles in Charge.
Right.
I am convinced that sometimes parents today have renamed their families Child in Charge. Child in Charge. And you can go right back to Dr. Dobson in the 80s. And focus on the family. I think he posed the same question. The child cannot be in charge. Mom, dad, take charge of your family. So that parallels the idea that my child is a product of the way I'm parenting him. There's no other excuse. Because even if there was another reason, what are you going to do? Hang your hat on it and blame it? if you're blaming something else for what our children are doing or becoming, how am I going to learn, grow, and change as a mom or a dad? No, I've got to say I own the result.
Let's talk about, we mentioned the QBQA, the question behind the question, but maybe we should just give some examples about, you know, the IQs versus the QBQs.
Sure.
Give some examples of both.
The philosophy here or the methodology is an IQ stands for incorrect question. It's just a little tiny acronym, and it's really about questions that begin with why, when, or who. So in general, why questions lead me to victim thinking. Why is this happening to me? Why don't I ever get a break? Those lead me to playing victim. And here's the key question we always pose to our audiences. When I play victim, who am I serving? And then I always say, careful with your answer, because people will say, well, I'm just serving myself. No. How am I serving myself? And then, of course, my Lord and my family and my clients and my customers and my coworkers if I'm playing victim. No. When I play victim and I ask why pity party poor me questions, I am serving nobody. The second trap is procrastination. That comes from when. When will my husband help me more? When will my wife do this? When will that department get its act together? When will somebody return my call? When questions tend to lead me to nowhere. They tend to say, that really, it's the same thing as saying, hey, I'm a procrastinator. Today I will add no value by rendering no service and taking no action. I will procrastinate, which is the friend of failure. Yes, procrastination is the friend of failure, Neil. And parents procrastinate all the time. Just like a manager at work, they see something that they know they should confront, and they let it go, and they let it go, and they let it go, and then one day, we have a really big problem. And that's why we say in the book, if you're having problems with your teenager, you probably had problems with your toddler. You know, Ben Franklin once said, if it hurts, it instructs, and I know that statement probably hurts people, but if you're having problems with your 15-year-old, you probably had problems when he was five. And the problem is you've been a weak parent, and you've allowed your child to be the boss, and now he's 15, and he's out of control, and you're scratching your head and wondering, why is society doing this to me? No, you did it to your child by not being a strong parent, and you put stuff off. That's procrastination. And then thirdly, we have blame. Who questions? Like, who made the mistake? Who dropped the ball? Who made the mess in here? And parents do need to ask some of these questions sometimes to help teach, but who questions often create fear. They're all about seeking a culprit, and they lead to blame. So the three traps that QBQ eliminates is victim thinking, then procrastination, and then the blame game. So if you take that over to parenting, you know, why doesn't my son ever open up to me? Well, a better question would be, what can I do to better understand him? My daughter, you know, I might say, why does my daughter speak to me disrespectfully? Well, the QBQ might be, how can I confront this more effectively? What have I done to allow her to disrespect me down through the years? Until we look at the past, Neil, there's no learning. The when questions. When will my son stop doing that? Well, what can I do to confront it immediately? Because that's my job, Mom, Dad. And then the blame question, you know. Who made the mess in here? Well, what can I do to teach my children my values? And maybe my value is cleanliness, but I've got to do a better job of confronting, teaching along the way, setting up natural consequences. The essence of personal accountability, Neil, is saying I own it. And that's what we're talking about with QBQ.
Great insight. We're going to get to some specifics. And you may have a question. Maybe there's some specific issues that you'd like to address with our guest today, John G. Miller, who's author of several books, including Parenting the QBQ Way. How to be an outstanding parent, raise great kids using the power of personal accountability. Great New Year's insight here early on in the new year. You can find out more about John's work on their website, qbq.com, or you can call us. Sign up for in the drawing for one of his books. It's 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Talk more with John G. Miller in just a moment here on Connecting Faith.
Expression.
And a serious expression
in the middle of July.
In the middle of July.
And if it means I must prepare.
Yes, that, Ted, that's It's too close to home sometimes, isn't it? So,
well, you know, our kids might say that, but adults say it too.
I know, that's true. Right? Yeah, and we're talking about, you know, what we were discussing today really has important relevance really for all of us, whatever our age and stage. You know, we are focusing a bit on parenting today, but it really represents for all of us about personal responsibility. What does that look like? And getting great insight today from John G. Miller, who is author. Well, he's the founder and the head of QBQ, Inc. It's an organizational development firm dedicated to making personal accountability a core value for organizations and individuals. And he's worked with lots of companies and nonprofits and individuals. And one of the books we're referencing today is Parenting the QBQ Way. And I thought it'd just be good to talk about some of those important guidelines as it relates to our relationships, those most important ones. And John, I want to ask you a little bit about one of the things you address. You say, you know, parents are owners, children are renters. What do you mean by that?
Well, Neil, you know, I always have a story behind the story. I was meeting with my pastor about a year ago, and he's built a church from his living room in 06 to 1,200 people today. So they've had the Lord has given them great world, you know, success in terms of growth and all that. And we were chatting one day at Starbucks, and he was expressing his frustration. So if you think about a pastor who's grown a church from his living room couch to 1,200 people, he owns it, you know, emotionally. It's his baby. You know what I'm saying? Not that he doesn't give credit to God, but he got it going, he and his wife, and, you know, it means everything to him. His frustration that day, I remember, was they had a youth guy who never did anything more than he was asked to do. He didn't ever see what I call the Kleenex laying on the floor, because years ago I had a nursing home long-term care center CEO complain to me, all I want is people to see the Kleenex on the floor and pick it up. So whether it's the CEO of a long-term care center or the pastor of a big growing church, I see this in these people, these senior people. They get frustrated because nobody's picking up the Kleenex. Well, you can bring that same concept into the home world. Let's be honest. Mom and dad, traditional family, we own the home. It's our place of residence. We care about it. We paint it. We trim it. We take care of it. We mow the grass, whatever. The kids are just passing through. They're like renters. And the challenge for a parent is always to continually develop in the child a sense of ownership. I mean, that's why we could debate this for 20 minutes if you wanted to, but we don't believe mom and dad should make children clean their room. Now, that's controversial, but it's their space. But if it gets so messy you can't walk through it, you're not coming in to say goodnight. That's a consequence. But the point is that the child has to own the bedroom. Let's use that as an example. So in the parenting book, we actually have an example in there where a woman came up to us after a talk and said, I think I've blown it. We said, what do you mean? And she said, well, I tell my daughter to clean her room, then she never does, so then I do it. And one day I asked her why she won't do it, and my daughter said, well, I don't do it, Mom, because I know you'll do it. So the example there tells us the mom is not building any ownership in the child to care for her stuff, her space, whatever. Just recently, I forgot what it was. I think it was one of my blogs on QBQ.com, but we talked about, you know what, when our kids leave this house, they know how to clean a toilet. They know how to do their laundry. We want to make sure that we are equipping our children for the world. Remember, we want them to go out and be in the world, not of the world. But if they're going to go be in the world, they better be leaving for college or for life, knowing how to clean a toilet, do their laundry, blah, blah, blah. That's ownership. And kids are natural renters. The challenge, the goal for mom and dad is to continually encourage them to own, to feel that accountability.
That pressure is always so strong, though, isn't it? So, well, yeah, I can help my kid on his school project, and of course he you know, it didn't come to me till Sunday night. It's due tomorrow, and you know, I don't want him to fail. You know, so I'll just help a little bit.
Don't get me started, Neil. I was on the plane last year with an investment woman. We got chatting. She was in investment business, and her colleague was two seats ahead. And she whispered to me after she learned what we did for a living and wrote a parenting book. She said, My colleague two seats ahead just 2 weekends ago found out his 14-year-old had a project due, and he spent the whole weekend doing it for his son. And I thought, that stuff really happens? It's hard for me to believe that parents could still be making those kinds of mistakes instead of saying natural consequences are the only things that help people grow. If my child is not doing his work, I mean, there may be questions for me, like what can I do to encourage him? What can I do to teach him? What can I do to set up a better environment for him? These are all QBQs. But in the end, if my child suffers from not caring or not working, I can't do the work for him. I mean, what are we going to do when he's 25 and out working someplace? Am I going to run into his cubicle and do his work for him? Can't do it.
Well, or you just invite him back home, maybe.
Well, we won't even have that discussion, will we, Neil?
No, let's not. So I'm wondering, is it more that maybe sometimes we have to unlearn our parenting heritage before we can sort of get into QBQ?
Let's go deeper here. I think it's psychology. I think it's still in – maybe it started in the 70s. I don't know. But parents still want to be their child's friend. Parents still want to – still are afraid to be called harsh. Nobody wants to be called harsh. I mean, I got lectured. I had stern words directed at me when I was a child. And did I turn out perfect? Not at all. But I think there's been a spectrum swing, a pendulum swing to the other direction where, well, I want to get down on the floor and play with my three-year-old. I want to be his buddy. I want to be his playmate. No, that's not what parents exist for. Now, don't get me wrong. We can play with our kids. But if we think our job is to be the child's playmate, to be the child's friend, how are we going to draw boundaries? When are we going to do the tough stuff? When are we going to say no? We've got a story in the parenting book about Maria, who had a son who wasn't passing Spanish, but he wanted his driver's license. And you know what? It would have been convenient for Maria to get the son a driver's license so he could take the little sister to dance. But Maria still drew that line and said no. Until you get that Spanish grade up to a B, there will be no driver's license. See, that's the tough stuff. And I'm afraid that sometimes parents are afraid to do the tough stuff because they don't want to be called harsh. Well, strong parenting is far more effective than weak parenting. And believe me, strong parents adore their children, but they know their job is to create structure, boundaries, discipline, guidelines, and let consequences take place.
So if we find ourselves nagging, talk about what's that a symptom of it?
Well, that's a good question. It could be simply lack of knowledge. The parent doesn't understand that nagging is a bad habit. It could be it could be the ignorance thing, as I just said. It could be a fear of dealing with reality. So instead of nagging, I might have to actually say, you know, to my son, I might have to say, Michael, if you don't do this by Tuesday, you will not get this. And then stick to it. But the nagging thing is fascinating because then mom and dad become like the parents in Charlie Brown cartoons from the 60s. Wah, 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 wah. And then there's disrespect. And then the daughter's wearing whatever she wants out of the house. And the son's moody and not talking to the parents. And the parents wonder, where did this come from? Well, gee, mom, dad, all you've done is nag. You've never disciplined. You've never set up any consequences. You've never done the tough stuff. I mean, think about it in employment, in the employment world. A good manager isn't going to nag. A really good manager is going to say, I need this done by Tuesday, period. Nothing wrong with that.
You know, we talked about, early on that if taking responsibility for how your children are behaving and as they're maybe 14, 15 years old, that it maybe goes back to when they were, you know, three or four. Where's the best place to start, and what is the starting of the QBQ way, and what does that look like? Maybe is it different to begin engaging a 2-year-old versus a 12-year-old?
I think the guiding question is always, who's in charge? Now, that question might turn off some parents, but I think it turns off the parents who don't want to be called harsh, and they want to be friends with their child. Who's in charge? And we have two teams in our house left. They're 17 and 16 out of our 7. 5 are out the door, 4 are married, and 2 are still here. These two teens know that mom and dad are in charge. Does that mean we don't collaborate? Does that mean we don't discuss? Does that mean we don't get their opinions? Not at all. But there is, boy, I hate to even say this on a radio interview because it sounds like I'm bragging, but there is good, solid respect when mom asks them to do something and they don't do it, they know there's going to be a consequence. So the kids are 17 and 16, and we're still implementing good, strong, accountable parenting. The book, Parenting the QBQ Way, closes with the story of a woman who emailed us and basically said, it's too late for me. if I start pulling this accountability stuff on my son, he'll never graduate from high school. What? She was afraid to start implementing the kind of tough stuff, the loving tough stuff that we teach in QBQ. But it's never too late to become a better parent. Take the father who's still nagging the 27-year-old son about, you know, get a job, go to school, do what I want you to be, do what I want you to be. All he's doing is driving that son away. That father can still change and ask a QBQ like, what can I do to better relate to my 27-year-old son? How can I learn to shut up? What can I do to encourage my son? At any stage, a parent can improve. And that's why we say in the book, Neil, this is a core principle of the book. Parenting is a learned skill. Parenting is a learned skill. And hey, folks, stop reaching out on Facebook asking your friends to give you ideas. I've said that to audiences, and they have laughed because there's this pattern, this trend towards young parents to reach out on Facebook. Wait a minute. Go to the seniors in your life, the elders, the people who have gone before you, the good books out there, the classes, the seminars, and learn new skills because parenting is a learned skill. We are not born to parent. We learn to parent. So at any stage, I can start saying, well, what can I do to be a better mom or dad?
You know, you're talking about your kids. You've still got a couple at home, but I know that your family – you added three children by adoption. Talk about maybe did that change, you know, parenting? I mean, it certainly changed the dynamics of the home, but
sure.
How did parenting style maybe change in that situation?
That is a great example of what I just said. We had to learn new skills. We had to learn new methodologies. We had to learn new ways of doing things, Neil, because the girls that came to us at ages 1, 3, and 5, full-blood sisters, parents had ran off. That's all I'll say. We've had to deal with attachment disorder issues. And if anybody on this call, you know, knows what attachment disorder is, you know the challenge is an adopted child works subconsciously to subvert the relationship with the new mother. So I, as a husband, I had to learn new skills of being a better husband because Karen needed immense support. Karen needed to learn new skills of parenting. I did too. Because what we used with the four, what we now call the originals, the four kids born from 83 to 90, we had to change those practices because everything we did with the four original kids didn't work with the three adopted children. Now we're all Millers. There's seven kids. They're all Millers. We're a family. We're a team. But when we brought in three adopted children, three foster kids, and adopted them 20 months later, it completely changed the dynamics. I mean, think about our youngest, Molly, a Bethel grad, by the way. Can I say Bethel on this call?
You can say Bethel, yes.
Okay,
if you mention Northwestern in the same sentence.
I should tell your audience, Kristen, who works with me now at 32, is a Northwestern grad. Tara, who's 29, is a Northwestern grad. And Michael and Molly are both Bethel grads.
All right, so we're good. We're good.
We're good, okay.
Right, we're even.
I've been on your campus many times. But Molly, think about that. When she was 10, we brought in three little girls, so she immediately almost lost her youngest position in the family. And I'm the youngest of four. I know how special that can be. But my wife was so smart. She'd worked very hard to make sure Molly never felt the pain, and I won't get into details, the pain of losing that youngest status. She, in some ways, protected Molly. And now Molly's 24, married and thriving in life. And it just changed things. I think it was good for the original kids, the birth children, to see it happen because we basically opened our doors. In our hearts, to three kids we didn't know, we moved them in the summer of 2000, and by 2002, they became Millers, and I think it taught the birth children about giving and sharing.
Oh, we're going to talk more about parenting and about life and about personal responsibility and accountability. Parenting the QBQ Way is the book we're referencing. The subtitle is How to Be an Outstanding Parent and Raise Great Kids Using the Power of Personal Accountability. John G. Miller is the founder of QBQ, and it's a firm, organizational development firm based in Colorado, dedicated to helping organizations make personal accountability a core value. It's not just organizations, it's individuals as well, and families, and we're talking about family today, and great insight early on this new year on Connecting Faith. If you'd like to sign up, we've got some copies of John's books to give away, and maybe have a question, you're welcome to join us at 877-933-2484. A little drawing for the books here at the end of the hour. 877-933-2484. More with John G. Miller in just a moment. Bill does. I suspect I've heard, almost that same sort of cadence, I'm thinking. Maybe a time or two in my grown-up years. Neil Stavem here, Ted Ross there, and John G. Miller is a guest today. We're talking parenting the QBQA.
So. Yeah, John, I'm just going to jump in. I had a question for you. I have two daughters, 14, or almost 14, and 12. And, we take them to church. They're active. My oldest is a member of the youth group there and has developed quite a passionate faith of her own, and we're thrilled about that. But for parents that are maybe wondering, we drag our kids to church and they go, they kind of go through the motions. They're really concerned about them and getting those Christian values instilled in their own life. Is it best for parents just to come out and say, you need to figure this out for yourself? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's a gray area kind of question. If kids are still in middle school or early high school, I think they go to church with us if that's our value. But I think there's an earlier question. The earlier question is, are we in the right church? Are we in the right church for this family? Is the youth group right for my kids? I mean, we came out of Minnesota, and we were involved in a church where people had been there for 125 years. Do you know what I mean? They had never left because, my grandpa came to this church, and my grandma and my aunt Jody came to this church. Well, wait a minute. Is it the right church for you and your family today? So I think parents who are strong and healthy and accountable are always looking in the mirror and saying, well, are we in the right church? Okay, well, if we conclude, and nobody's right on everything, nobody's perfect, this is the right church for our family. Well, then I guess it's dragging them to church until they're a certain age where we finally have to say, I guess you don't come if you don't come. But, there's before that, there's a lot of teaching. There's a lot of teaching about other ways to serve God, other ways to worship God. Maybe we've made church the be-all and end-all of worshiping our Lord and Savior, and we don't do anything during the week. So anyway, good question. I think the first question to ask is, are we in the right church for our kids?
Good word. John, can siblings apply QBQ to each other, and what does that look like?
Absolutely, sure. And our kids, of course, the joke in our family since I created the QBQ back about 1994 is sometimes my kids will look at me and say, Dad, is there a QBQ here for you? So they very much know. They don't walk around practicing the QBQ or the three guidelines, which I haven't shared on this interview, but every QBQ begins with a what or how. What or how, not why, when, and who. And it contains the word I, because I can only change me. This is all in the book. And it focuses on action. So if you re-listen to this interview, you'll notice that every QBQ I've shared sounds like this. What can I do? It always has the I in it, and it always begins with what or how. Those are the guidelines, and the siblings can use them too. But I think more importantly, as parents, we are not allowing certain things to enter our home. We're not allowing picking on people. We're not allowing shaming. We're not allowing criticism. It doesn't mean we can't have honest, forthright conversations. But a family is a culture. Just like a culture at 3M or St. Jude Medical or these companies I've mentioned today, every organization is different. And a family has a culture. And I have seen, and maybe you have too, families that have a culture of mean. They are mean to each other. So we need to make sure as parents we're working on elevating that culture. And, of course, it always begins with changing my behavior. And mom needs to change her behavior because modeling is the most powerful of all teachers. So, siblings can use QBQ, but it always comes back to mom or dad. And this brings up a point I've just got to make. The book is not for the kids. Parenting the QBQA is not for the kids. It is for the mom and the dad. We've had countless people email us and say, I want to get a hold of parenting the QBQA because I need to make my 12-year-old do his math homework. I need to make my teenage daughter speak to me more respectfully. I need to get my 25-year-old son off the couch and out into the workforce. Well, wait a minute, Mom, Dad, the book is not for them. It's for Mom and Dad. What can I do to be a better parent?
I know you addressed that as well, that, we can only change ourselves, really. And I want to ask Dawn, listening in Fargo, had a comment and a question. She said, I find that accountability brings a person to integrity. Maybe you can address that. And then she also wants to know, what's the difference between your QBQ book and the Flipping the Switch books?
Okay, well, integrity is defined in QBQ as being what I say I am by acting in accordance with my words. I'll say that one more time. Being what I say I am by acting in accordance with my word. So we actually do have a definition of accountability or integrity in the book, in the QBQ book. And the key to that is, see, that's accountability. Quick example. If I say, I love my children just as they are, but I'm always criticizing them, that's a lack of integrity. If I'm a manager at work and I say, I believe in positive coaching, but then I beat someone up verbally in a meeting in front of his peers, I'm not walking my talk. So there's an accountability piece tied to integrity. And what's integrity? Being what I say I am by acting in accordance with my words. And then the other question, QBQ, flipping the switch. QBQ was first. Flipping the switch was second. It's really a companion book. It takes QBQ to the next level. It helps bring five core principles to life: learning, service, trust, ownership, and creativity. Those five principles are brought to life in Flipping the Switch using the QBQ methodology. So if somebody was to say, which book should I read first? You could read both, either one first. But I would start with QBQ if you have a choice, then read Flipping the Switch. If you're a mom or a dad, Parenting the QBQ Way ties all this together toward our parenting and our home life.
You've given several examples throughout our time here. We've got just about 3 or so minutes left. I'm wondering, is there maybe a most common problem or something when, you know, someone writes to you or they comes up after a seminar and say, well, this is my issue. Is there one that sort of rises to the top all the time?
It always ties back to somehow to do with probably weak parenting. My wife was at her hairdresser a couple months ago, sitting in the chair for a long time. And the hairdresser likes to share and talks about her toddler. And one day she told Karen this story, something about, well, whenever we go to Target, my 3-year-old son just screams and yells and screams and yells until I buy him a toy. What do I do? And my wife looked at her, and she's known this gal for 10 years, and just said, stop. I mean, I'm sorry, but Nike's right. Just do it. And in this case, to that mom, stop. Stop giving in. Stop melting in front of your client, your child. Stop being weak. Now, if you want to get into specifics, remove him from the store. Stop your shopping. Whatever. But she was at a loss. What, my son screams until I buy him a toy. What do I do? Stop. Sometimes we just have to have an intervention with ourselves, Neil, and just stop. And then we need to learn. And so that's what PQW, Parenting the QBQ Way, is all about. Learning ways to stop being a weak parent and start being a strong parent. Remember that guiding question. Who's in charge? Mom, Dad, that's your job.
You know, we just about 90 seconds left. How do we handle regrets over past failures? Some encouragement for maybe us parents with older kids.
Well, you know, we've got a chapter in the book on regret titled Regrets No More, and there's a great story in there about Karen one day dealing with Tara when she was about 8. Now she regrets the way she handled it, and she tells the story in the book. You know, that's emotional strength. That's emotional health, moving past regrets. Everybody has regrets. I think in parenting, the best thing to do is to talk with those adult children about that moment. And Karen and Tara, who's now 29, Tara's 29, they have had many fun conversations years later about the time that mom really admits that she did not have a good parenting moment, and that story's in the book. I think talking about it, no different than going to a counselor, I guess, letting that adult child process it and maybe saying these magic words, I'm sorry.
That goes a long way anytime, any situation, doesn't it?
It does. And we even talk about that in Parenting the QBQ Way, that strong moms and dads are willing to say, I'm sorry. Those are powerful words. And here's the key. How can we ever expect our child to apologize if we never do?
Yeah, you said early on about modeling is the most powerful of all the teachers, right?
Amen.
All right. I've probably got more questions, but there's probably questions behind the questions, too, that we are not going to get to have time for. But
maybe.
I want to encourage John G. Miller to you and find out about the resources he's got available, his blogs and the writing and the speaking. Maybe when he's coming to your area, you have an opportunity to hear him. QBQ.com. is the website, QBQ.com. John G. Miller, my guest today, and he's written several books, including QBQ, The Question Behind the Question, Flipping the Switch, It's Unleashed the Power of Personal Accountability, the one we've been referencing, Parenting the QBQ Way, How to Be an Outstanding Parent, Raise Great Kids Using the Power of Personal Accountability. John, always good to chat with you, and thank you for the encouragement early on this new year that we can see parenting move forward in a positive way this year.
Neil, thank you. Always fun to be on your show.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. If you missed part of today's program, I want to just encourage you to check out the podcast and maybe share it with a friend. That's the great thing. All our podcasts are easily shareable. So go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you can get the archives there, podcasts, this and other shows, and pass them on to a friend. And I always love to hear your comments as well. You can drop us a note there as well, myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith, and thanks for listening.